I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And welcome to another edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. This is going to be a two-hour show, as usual, probably the last of three shows of mine, unless something unusual happens. Free Radio Santa Cruz has not found a studio. If you have any ideas about a studio, you should call us at 423-4833. That's actually my number, 423-HUFF. And we'll rush out and see if we can use the space, since we can pay for it. But we're looking for a 10 by 10 space, and we don't get it, we're gone. We're going to start moving this coming Sunday, but we'll actually go off the air the next Sunday. So you do have, I guess, three more of my shows. At least that's from my perspective what I'm focusing on. However, on the line with us from the Hooskow is Rebecca. Is it Mills, Rebecca?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, I want to make sure I've got you. Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah.
Good. So, Rebecca, you may I don't know if our listeners remember. Some of them may. I did do two recorded interviews with you from jail about 3 or 4 months ago. You were you've been facing trial for over a year, and they've delayed your trial based upon a claim that you are incompetent. Correct?
Yeah, that's what's been going on. Well, it got delayed, then it got reinstated, and then it got delayed again, and then there's a recommendation in now that I am competent, but the judge just won't accept that, and he's sending me back to the state hospital, which is the people that made the recommendation that I am competent to stand trial.
And that's Judge Volkman that you were telling me.
Yeah.
And what was it that led in your uppity behavior for him to try to cut you out of the trial process?
Well, I wasn't getting along with my attorney. I, you know, wanted to fight the charges that I'm facing, which are not really super serious charges. I, you know, had a conflict with my neighbors. The police were called. I ended up getting charged with burglary, criminal threats, and resisting arrest. And my attorney made promises to me and didn't follow through, and I couldn't reach her and all this stuff. I tried to get her replaced, and I guess in the courtroom, you know, the judge didn't get me, and I don't know. I tend to talk fast. I'm intelligent. I don't know. So I guess he took that the wrong way. The first time that I was, you know, that's the first time a doubt was raised as to my competency was when I was trying to get a lawyer that would work with me. And then, you know, that kind of cast the pall over everything that goes after it. So it just was a snowball from there, really, because they had one evaluator come in and speak with me at the time. I was having a back problem. I was trying to, you know, just get the interview over with really quickly. He was taking notes. He didn't really, you know, ask me for any feedback, or, you know, he just kind of took notes on my answers to his questions. And then when I did finally get access to his report, you know, he admits in his report I was talking too fast for him to follow, you know, and that to him was a sign of mania. But he never asked me to slow down or clarify anything. You know, and he just misrepresented what I said. And then later on, I found out that if, in the law, it says that if the defendant wants to contest a finding of incompetency, that they're supposed to have two evaluators, and they didn't do that. But anyway, I went down to the state hospital. I was lucid. They talked to me. I got sent back, you know, recommended to send back the third day I was there. And then 10 days later came back up here, and they were like, that's a record turnaround for someone that goes, you know, on an incompetent stand trial. I got restored to competency, things continued, and then when it got close to trial again and I hadn't been able to work with this attorney, she hadn't even shown me the evidence that was supposed to prove that I was, you know, guilty or, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt. And they raised another doubt as to my competency, had, you know, people write reports about. Anyway, that's a long answer to a short question.
No,
I guess.
It's a good answer. I mean, it brings us somewhat up to date. Name of your attorney, who, or was it one attorney or more than one attorney you had problems with?
Yeah, one attorney. I mean, I had originally been assigned one person, and then when I wanted to proceed beyond the preliminary hearing stage, my case got reassigned to this other lady who had it for over a year. And then something fortuitous for me is that she decided recently to leave the public defender's office as of a little over a week ago, I guess. And so I've been trying for over a year to get a new attorney, to get someone who, you know, won't lie to me, who will work with me, who will present the evidence to me and help me, you know, fight these charges. And, you know, and I hadn't been able to do that through the court process. And then, you know, through just kind of what I say, act of God, I got to find someone else who seems like I'll be able to work with.
What was the name of the attorney that is leaving the office?
Her name was Amy Buenteo, and I don't know what she's moved on to. And, you know, I mean, I guess she has done a good job for some of her clients, and that's what the judge was basing his denial of my, you know, request on was, you know, he said at the first time that I tried to get her replaced.
Rebecca, again, can you spell her last name for me?
That's Buenteello.
Huh, okay. I mean, I myself have had many problems with attorneys, and they rarely do what I want without very, very careful direction. But I'm very, very picky, you know. I mean, I'm usually looking at it from an activist standpoint rather than, the standpoint of a person simply trying to get the maximum legal mileage out of an attorney, which is, you know, fair to do as well. So you're accused right now of what? Burglary, criminal threats, and resisting arrest. What are you accused of burglaring?
Well, that's a charge, and I mean, I shouldn't go into too much detail because, you know, it's whatever, you know, anything I say can be used against me.
Yeah.
But that charge can be made when you enter a building with the intent to commit a felony. I mean, most people think that you're stealing something, that has to be part of that charge. That's not true. If you're entering a place with an intent to commit a felony, that charge applies, and that's how they're trying to use that. And the DAs tend to try to overcharge so that you can, you know, bargain down from there. So I had a hearing. The one thing that my old attorney did do, that she said she would do, that it took, you know, over going on a year to actually have happen, was a motion to dismiss based on the idea that I was unable to inform intent to commit these crimes, which, you know, require intent. And so at the hearing for that, there was a little bit of a discussion with the judge and the DA there, and the issue was brought up, okay, what felony did Ms. Mills have an intent to commit? And the DA was kind of like at a loss. He's like, kidnapping? And I'm just like, that's just, you know, blatantly ridiculous. I mean, I did not want these neighbors around me. I mean, we were having a conflict, and, you know, I believe they provoked me and you know, did some things. Anyway, Rebecca, they misrepresented what happened.
It sounds to me like they're trying to have it both ways. Either they, if they claim you're incompetent, are they also claiming that you had the intent, the requisite intent to commit a burglary at the same time as you're incompetent?
It's just happening at different points in time, right? So incompetent is while you're in the court process, whereas being able to have intent would be during the time at which the events occurred that you're charged with a crime for. So they're related but not the same, right? Because it's different points in time. But, you know, a lot of people who aren't with it mentally would be both incompetent and, you know, because of whatever mental illness or defect, unable to form intent to commit whatever they're charged with if it's a crime of intent.
So as I understand, now they're trying to send you back to Patton State Hospital again for another competency investigation or mental health treatment.
Yeah, well, it's not a new. It's just refusing to accept it. They haven't had any new evidence presented. He just refused to accept the recommendation that was made. So it's kind of a finger-pointing game at this point where, I mean, the judge, I've had the appearance, like 3 days after I came back up here. I've been waiting over a month now, but I had a court appearance on August 6th, and I thought, because this had happened once before, I thought, okay, I'll be restored to competency, my case will resume, we'll see what happens. And that didn't happen, so that was a bit of a shock. And then he had scheduled a status conference update, kind of court date, just to see how things were going for the 26th, which I wasn't required to attend if I was at Patton, but I hadn't been transported. So, you know, he was kind of saying, okay, well, Patton made a mistake, and why is Rebecca here? And it's like, well, that's actually not true. You're the one that made the mistake in not accepting their recommendation. But it's a little bit confusing to this county because the psychiatrist down there, there's like a clause that they can invoke that says that they're afraid that you might lose your competency if you're not under continued treatment, right? And so since they've seen me twice on this same case, he's like, we don't want to see you again, so we're going to make the recommendation that, you know, instead of being in jail, you be in a treatment facility while your case proceeds so that we make sure we don't see you again. And that really backfired because this is a small county, and they've never seen that recommendation. They don't know what to do. They don't know if there's any facilities around here that qualify. And the judge sees the term treatment facility and thinks Patton, which it is, but it's not satisfactory for me to be at while my case is in progress.
Okay, slow down. Slow down.
400 miles away.
Maybe get you to slow down, Rebecca, because you are.
Sorry.
No. You're packing a lot of power into a short space of time, and you have only about, I guess, 5 or 7 minutes left before the jail phone system shuts you down, right?
Yeah, I can make calls out, but they limit each individual call to 15 minutes, so I can call back.
Are they charging you per call, or is it going? Are you getting?
Oh yeah. If they're charged no matter what. It's either collect and someone else pays, or I pay outgoing. Yeah.
Now I know you set up a website. You told me last time we talked. Is your website still up? Is information on it? If folks are interested in getting more and learning more about your case?
Yeah, there's some stuff up there. I mean, that's, you know, because I'm in jail and I don't have access to do things myself, it kind of depends on friends having time to do things. I sent out a lot of content to a friend of mine. He hasn't had time to post it all. There's a few things up there. But it's still active. It's just not, you know, current.
And what is that? What is that website?
It's my name, RebeccaMills.org. I have an unusual spelling of my first name. It's R-E-B-E-K-A-H and then M-I-L-L-S.
Yeah.
And I think he's in the process of posting some additional material, but because some of it's sensitive and, you know, whatever, related to my criminal case, I think he's going to pass or protect a bunch of it. Anyway, I'm in communication with him on that.
Mm-hmm. So I spent some time talking to you about jail conditions while you were in jail, and you mm-hmm. talked about which part of the jail you're being held in?
Right now, I'm in D unit. So they've changed things around, actually, in the past couple of weeks from how it's been for quite a while. I don't know if you heard about this situation. They had originally had two open units for females, G and H, and G was a larger unit and H is a smaller one. And they started this recovery program a couple weeks ago, and that's happening in H unit, so that's only for people that are in that program now. So the only open unit for females that as of now, and I don't know, as long as they stick with this, is G, and that's where I'm at.
I know you also stated that you're having some problems with some of the inmates at that time, and what's your perspective? Has it changed in terms of what's your relationship with the other inmates?
Well, some of the people that I had the greatest kind of issues with are now over in the program, and I'm not there, so that's a bit of a relief. And, you know, they've been sentenced or whatever. They're just, you know, they're doing their thing. They're on their own path. And, you know, I just...
1 minute remaining.
Oh, we're almost out of time. I could call you back if you want. But I just, you know, kind of as a personal growth thing, kind of came to realize that the way I was reacting to them was not helping my situation and was not helping them. And, you know, so it was kind of better to... not stand my ground on certain things. And, you know, I was really upset more with jail staff for not holding them in line and allowing them to get away with harassing me and threatening me and being just really shady to me. And when I complained about it, just basically doing nothing.
So what was your eventual outcome? You can call back if you want. Depends on how you feel about it. If you want to talk some more, you can.
Yeah, no, I'll call back.
All right. Then we got about, 30 seconds or something? Or
yeah, probably. Yeah.
So it'll be cut off at any moment. We're talking with Rebecca Mills from the, Unit H, is that right?
D unit in the county jail.
D unit, D as in David, right?
G as in George.
G as in George. Okay, well then, call us back and give us the real George, Rebecca.
Okay, there you go.
Thank you for using IC Solutions.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
And that's a call from jail from Rebecca Mills, and you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. These are the closing broadcasts of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We still have a $500 reward. Yeah, it's gone up. If you can find us a studio space, that doesn't mean a transmitter space. It's just a space where we can locate our broadcasting online equipment, which is completely legal, and we'll pay. We're thinking of anywhere from $300 to $500. And we need it pretty badly if we're going to continue the station again. Is that we move for sure on the 21st. We begin dismantling next Sunday on the 13th. So get in touch. Give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's my number, the number also of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And let me know if you got some ideas, any kind of leads. Ask around if you like these shows, if you like having free radio in the community. That's the way it's going to continue. I will look for alternate means of broadcasting the show, but no promises. I am not the most techie savvy guy, so you have to consider that. Sounds like our jailbird is calling back. Hi there, you're on
Hello.
Free Radio.
You have a call at no expense to you from
Rebecca Mill,
an inmate at the Santa Cruz County Correctional Facility. To accept this call, press or say 5. Thing at any time. Thank you for using IC Solutions. You may begin speaking now.
Hello?
Hey, Rebecca, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. So, do you know if anyone else has been in your situation? Have you met anybody else who is also being held on this competency concern?
Santa Cruz, I mean, obviously, when you go to the state hospital, they have entire units. They have like 400 people down there from, you know, all over California, mostly from those neighboring counties down there that are held on that status. So I met quite a few. From this county, there's a handful, you know, every so often that go down.
Is there any standard kind of course of action that happens to people who are in this? Sounds like a kind of a limbo.
Well, I'm in kind of a really, really obviously a limbo situation, because the normal thing that happens is a recommendation is put in, you know, to restore someone to competency. They get restored, and they want to cut a deal as soon as possible, and their case gets resolved, you know? And so because I've been down there twice, and I'm still trying to fight to get a not guilty verdict or get a really deal that's acceptable to me, which would not involve a felony. I mean, I believe my neighbors lied and provoked me and, you know, all kinds of things, and they're just not credible, and they're the only ones who are, you know, really alleging that I committed a crime. And anyway, that whole thing, I'm not willing to, you know, I'm holding out, and that's mm-hmm. very, very atypical. Most people want to get out of jail as soon as possible, and, you know.
Let me ask you, Rebecca, who's the DA who's handling your case?
I think, at least for my last several court appearances, it's been Jesus Delgadillo.
Well, Jesus Delgadillo?
Yeah.
And has he been offering you deals of any kind?
I had a deal that was offered right before I was found incompetent at trial in April, right before they raised the doubt of, you know, whether I was competent and initiated those proceedings. And just the poor communication with my attorney. I mean, when I was meeting with her and she mentioned it included a felony, said I don't want to take a felony. She didn't even tell me all the terms of the deal, and it was only recently that, you know, she just kind of stormed off, whatever. It was only recently that I was able to get the terms of that deal, which, you know, I wasn't willing to take a felony. But, you know, they're trying to get me to plead to, at that time, was felony vandalism with a 3-year probation with a lot of conditions on it.
And do you have a prior record, if you care to say?
Not really. I mean, I have 2 misdemeanors for disturbing the peace. I don't have any significant criminal history.
Did you plead or were you convicted of disturbing the peace?
Yeah, those were both plea deals. I was charged originally with other things, and one of them I was in custody when I entered a plea, and the other one I wasn't. I was just showing up to court.
Were these both in Santa Cruz, or were they out of the area?
Oh, no, those were in other jurisdictions. No, this is the first time I've dealt with the Santa Cruz law enforcement justice system. No, one of them was in Santa Barbara in, like, 2009. They were kind of close together in 2009 when I was going through a difficult period where I was having some issues with my family. But, one was in Santa Barbara and one was in down near, Palm Springs.
So, you have been in jail now for how long?
14 and a half months. Well, I mean, in custody, I was at Patton in total at the state hospital for 2 times for a total of, 2.5 months. So, basically a full year in county and then also, 2.5 months down in Patton.
Where's the food better? Hospital. Food better Patton or?
Oh, definitely a Patton. Definitely a Patton. They actually have, fresh vegetables. They have all kinds of, they have better food and more of it and, And you can get things sent to you there. You can get things that aren't available here. Anything that's from a legitimate vendor that's not listed as contraband, you can have sent in to you.
Huh. And whereas in this jail,
you can't do that at jail.
What's the situation here?
Jail, you can buy things off commissary and you can get printed materials, and that's basically it. You know, you can get people to send you books or, you know, things in the mail like paper, written stuff. And you could buy what they have on the commissary, which is, you know, 95% junk food.
Any access to the law library here in the Santa Cruz County Jail?
They don't have a law library per se. The way that they satisfy the legal requirements to provide access to legal research materials is they have a contract with the Legal Research Service, and you submit a request for materials related to a specific subject, and they kind of mail them back to you, and then you kind of read them and see if it's what you want.
Sounds pretty cumbersome.
It takes a while, and if you don't get what you want, there's really not much, you know, if you requested something specific and they just misunderstood it, you have to re-request it and hope that maybe you get what you wanted.
Have you had many visitors while you've been in jail?
Well, I'm not from Santa Cruz. I moved to Santa Cruz in, September 2012. I was a student up at UCSD, and I studied massage, and I was wrapping that up right before I got arrested. And so I didn't have a lot of local people that were able to, you know, be coming to visit. I've had two different people come visit me here. I have a friend from massage school, and then my mother came up. She's in Santa Barbara County. She came up a few times. I've had some family. I've actually had a couple of family members just as one-offs, like around Christmas, that were, you know, traveling for Christmas and what have you. But, yeah, as far as regular visitors, you know, like, it's been difficult. That's one thing that's been difficult, because I don't have the local support, and you don't, you know, your life gets put on hold, and they don't care when you get arrested, you know, and then how are you going to handle your personal business? How are you going to do this or that? They don't care, you know?
So what is, have you, you know, when you, if you ask for a, you know, for a writ of habeas corpus, they say, what, you've had your hearing in Volkman's court, he's declared you, you had a competency hearing, and they declared you incompetent about a year ago? Is that when that happened? Or?
No, so the current one that's pending, that's effective, the initial one was in September, and I was restored to competency in December. Usually you have to wait a while to go down to the state hospital, like I'm waiting now. So then the new one was the end of April, and then I had, you know, I'm still not been restored to competency, even though that's the recommendation of, you know, the experts at the state hospital. So I'm just, you know, so yeah, a writ of habeas corpus would be appropriate in this situation. I filed a couple of writs previously before I got denied here, just based on the irregularity of the initial finding, where they only had one expert and it should have been two, and, you know, okay, that wasn't legit, and that's denying my speedy trial. And anyways, all those writs got denied in the, and then at this most recent one that I wasn't given the opportunity to offer any of my own testimony, they just based the decision solely on these written reports from these psychologists that are really riddled with factual errors and misinterpretations. And, you know, if I would have had an opportunity to say anything about them, maybe it, you know, the ruling would have gone differently. Anyway, those were denied kind of without addressing the legal issues by the another judge in the Santa Cruz court. So to have those pursued, I would have to file those in the Court of Appeal, which is kind of hard to figure out how to do for my current situation.
What was the, who was the judge? Rebecca, who was the judge who denied you in the other court?
Paul Maragonda.
Oh, of course. Wow. Well, what kind of support are you seeking from people outside who are interested in your case? I mean, it's all pretty obscure is one of the problems. I mean, it sounds like, you know, a kind of mini Guantanamo situation to me, because you're being held,
yeah,
essentially.
Yeah, in a way it is, yes.
I mean, I'm
like I said, I do have a new public defender who I think will be good for me.
What's the name of the new public defender?
Her name is Athena Reese.
Say it one more time.
Athena Reese.
Spell it.
Her last name, R-E-I-S, and then Athena, the A. H-E-N-A.
Gotcha. And is she?
And so, as far as my concerns that I had, that I wouldn't get like a vigorous defense that would explore all of the, you know, possible defenses and give me, you know, the best chance of being found not guilty, I'm, you know, working with her, and I hope that, you know, that will happen. But nothing can happen until I'm restored to competency, you know. And I'm not sure how much he's willing or able to do on that, you know. So,
What's the process for getting restored to competency?
Well, the judge has to, you know, just say that he's, you know, found me competent to stand trial. So, I mean, if I didn't do anything special, I'll get sent down to Patton. They'll figure out to issue another recommendation and send me back up here. He'll have to have another hearing where hopefully he'll, you know, accept their recommendation. And then, you know, I mean, the judge ultimately has to accept the recommendation that I am competent to stand trial. Now, a way to go around that would be, like you mentioned, a writ of habeas corpus, you know. Like, I could file one about my current situation, which is just, I don't have access to, you know, an office here, or I could have done it a long time ago. But, you know, to make copies, to make phone calls, to do this, to do that. But I could file a writ about my current situation to try to, like, kind of end run that process and say, you know, I should have been restored to competency. The experts say I am competent. There's no reason why, you know, my trial shouldn't continue, or, you know, charges should be dropped because my trial's been unconstitutionally delayed. I was told by a private attorney when I was looking into getting private attorneys that if that happens, you know, it's up to the prosecutor to refile charges. So it might, you know, not help in the long run. But at least it would, you know, get out of this competency kind of never land.
Well, indeed. I think I'm going to leave it there unless there's more you want to add.
One of the things is, you know, when I came into custody, I was really not doing well physically with my health and my health concerns, and just in general, you know, the way that inmates are treated who have legitimate health problems here is just really terrible. Some of the people, I mean, it's a contractor that provides the medical care here. It's the same contractor that's being sued in a class action in Monterey County, you know, for providing inadequate care.
The name of the contractor is?
Forensic Medical Group Incorporated, I believe.
Okay.
Just all kinds of things where I was just, you know, denied care in a really obvious way. I mean, I had a back surgery 10 years ago for, you know, disc herniation. I was having new symptoms related to that, and they were claiming that I didn't have any symptoms, not providing me even anti-inflammatory medication for that. Because, I mean, if you just have shooting nerve pain and you don't do a physical exam and you just look at someone, you can easily deny that they're having any issue, you know? Meanwhile, they're in severe pain, and it's just ridiculous. I mean, that's just one example. I had unexplained fever. I had unexplained high blood pressure. They didn't do any monitoring on that. Just all kinds of stuff. They it's just ridiculously negligent care. You know, I had, it just goes on and on. And I'm healthy now, and so that's, you know, a relief. But I was trying for the longest time to get proper care, proper treatment, proper diagnosis, and I was just left hanging.
Rebecca, let me interrupt and say, if people want to correspond with you, how should they write to you?
Well, I'm currently at the jail, so as long as I'm here, they can send me correspondence here. But like I mentioned, I'll probably be going to Patton soon, and then mail would get returned to sender. My address here, it's my name, and then my S number, which is 249725, and then the jail address, Santa Cruz Main Jail, 259 Water Street, Santa Cruz, California, 95060. Once I get transferred to Patton, you know, I would have a new, they have their own identification numbers, but if people just use my name and then the address at Patton, which is 3102 East Highland Avenue, Patton, California, and let me see, 92369, they should be able to find me, I guess.
Well,
it just depends. I'm in kind of limbo as far as where I'm going to be, too. Any kind of postal mail might get lost.
If you want, you know, if you want, send me a letter. Keep me advised.
One minute remaining.
Let me give you. Got a pencil for my address? It's Robert Norris.
Yeah. I'll need to get your address. Maybe I can call you back later.
Yeah. Why don't you do that? We'll talk again. And thank you for calling in. We'll be talking with Rebecca Mills. I got that right. And again,
yes.
You can reach her at the moment. She's S249725, Santa Cruz Main Jail, 259 Water, 95060. And if you need to find out that address again, call me on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And you can talk to a genuinely incompetent woman who sounds pretty competent.
Okay.
Thanks, Rebecca, for calling me. Bye-bye. And you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. I'm Robert, and this is Bathrob Spears Broadsides in the fourth to last show of mine on Free Radio, barring unusual circumstances. We're hoping that we will find those unusual circumstances through you and be able to give you a $500 finder's fee for finding us a place where we can do a studio, and that doesn't requires only a 10x10 space, more or less, a place where we can set up a shed even in a backyard, provided we have access to electricity. So get in touch at 423-4833 if you want to help us with that, and it's you can keep the show going if that's what you want to do. Let's do a little music, and I'll be back.
Santa Cruz, California. I'm down here on Pacific Avenue. It's a beautiful day, a little warm for my taste, but not quite too hot. And my two favorite artists are here with their display devices, Joff and Alex. And they're not being bothered by police. In fact, I've even heard of a victory sign or a peace sign has been passed by. So that's good by the police. On the other hand, there are no blue markings, which might be good, too, indicating that the city's blue marking department has not been busy, which is good. Also, I heard the word that, as far as I know, and I don't think this is in confidence, there'll be a continued activity in the courtroom of Commissioner Baskett in a couple of weeks on this case.
And this, of course, these are the two artists who were arrested for being outside the blue boxes after the blue boxes themselves were removed. I believe they were severely restricted, and Alex and Joff, who you may have seen downtown, large artists free and other displays that 6 feet high. Their paintings were hung on it in all four different directions. And it was a pretty compact display. So I think it actually met the restrictive requirements of the earlier ordinance. The current ordinance states that you cannot have a performance or display device of any kind, meaning something that's capable of holding tangible things, outside of either the blue, yellow, or red boxes. I think that those are the colors. And then recently they eliminated all but the blue boxes, and even more recently they eliminated even those, so there are no boxes. So in actual fact, by my reading of it, all performers downtown who have a display device, all political tablers, all vendors are illegal. And the police apparently are not going after them. At least I haven't heard that's the case. Alex and Joff went to court, and you're going to hear me talking more about it. They apparently, in my view, made the mistake of going into Baskett's court and not disqualifying her, which is, I think, always a mistake. And so she had a trial with them. Usually the first time you appear in someone's court, you get an arraignment, but Alex and Joff are in an unusual situation. I may have talked about this before. I hope I'm not repeating myself. Because they were taken into court initially, immediately, by the police in an unusual procedure that normally is only invoked by the individuals who are being victimized by the police. That is to say, the vendors or the people that are getting arrested by the police. They say, take me to a magistrate. And if it's during court hours, the police are obliged to take them there for a probable cause hearing, at which point the magistrate assigns them a court for a trial. And I think that's what apparently happened in this case. I think it was Judge Gallagher or some such assigned Joff and Alex, the two artists, to a Baskett's courtroom for trial. And normally, you know, the usual procedure is you have to disqualify a judicial officer, whether a commissioner or a judge. You have one simply blank check disqualification. That's called a peremptory challenge before the arraignment or at the arraignment. Actually, I think you can probably do it after the arraignment, too, by my reading of the code. But usually it's done before the clerk, the court, when you go up to make your trial date to start with. You file a paper saying, I want to disqualify this person. Or you go do it in court when you actually appear there. You say, I want to disqualify you because I believe you're prejudiced. And you don't have to give a lot of explanation. You don't have to prove anything. You just have to state it. But apparently Alex and Joff decided not to do that. And so they had a trial with only one witness, Keith McHenry, as far as I know. I had thought for sure they were disqualifying Baskett. So I wrote about their case. I put it up on Santa Cruz Indie Media. But I advised people that they, you know, they prefer to have people go to their trial and not to their arraignment, which would be delayed because they'd be sent into a new court. I don't know if it would be an arraignment or a trial, but it would be a delay, certainly, of a hearing, and going to Baskett's court would not have been to the point. She's the basement Department 10 commissioner. In any case, I think they got tried, and they are going to get a decision from Baskett, and I am not optimistic, but, you know, one can always be wrong, and judges can always change their minds. People can have religious conversions. Big Rock Candy Mountain can suddenly appear out of the Pacific. Actually, I kind of doubt it, but we'll see what happens. Let's hear some more, however, from Pacific Avenue. And this is from September 6th. I guess it was on Sunday or Monday of this week.
And perhaps we'll hear more about that. Does that sound fair enough, Alex? Yeah. So, that's all I've heard from down here after a somewhat turbulent talk with Alex and Joff. Alex was concerned that perhaps some of his legal strategies were revealed. And we have another display device with more paintings down here. Nice looking display device, also on wheels. It's kind of a similar box shape. Who are you? Oh, yes, I think I've seen the author of this display device. Howdy. And we have that infamous jeweler woman. How's it going? How are sales today?
It's good. It's calm and beautiful weather.
And how long have you been here?
1 hour.
Have you been advised you have to move along every hour?
No, I haven't.
Excellent. Good. You're doing fine then. And I see you have no blue boxes around you, which is also good, actually. I'm glad to see that. And you, however, are within...
Got
the 14 feet of a bench, but you do have a you have the Blue Bucks t-shirt. Congratulations. Why aren't you wearing it?
I just got it from the people over there.
It says, I was in the Blue Box.
Yes. There's no bombs.
And there were some t-shirts issued in support of Abby and Keith, two activists who were unceremoniously arrested in the middle of the night at the Freedom Sleepers group for allegedly creating additional blue boxes on Pacific Avenue, which would expand the performance spaces of performers and vendors and so forth who have been, contracted by the tender mercies of Julie Hendy and Company, the previously the redevelopment agency person. She's got another title, but she's one of the key people there that helps to crunch people into smaller spaces. Make things orderly, you know. So that's what these shirts say. It's something about I was in the blue box, or I'm in the blue box, or some such thing. And you can see some. I actually have one of those shirts myself. So you too can get a shirt. You might find them at the Food Not Bombs events, which happen every Saturday and Sunday from 4 to 6 at the main post office, or near the main post office in Santa Cruz.
It's a support of the two Food Not Bombs 2, the Blue Box 2, who are facing misdemeanor charges for adding additional blue boxes for performers' benefits, all of which, including the original blue boxes, have been removed by the city. And we've been talking with...
Marcella.
Marcella, anything happened today that you noted you want to pass on?
No, nothing different than usual. Normally. All good.
Thank you very much. All right. So there seem to be many artists, well, three anyway, with three large displays on the street. And here we have Lucero Luna, a Food Not Bomb / Freedom Sleepers activist, at her table. What's going on here, Lucero?
Free entertainment.
You're doing some free entertainment?
In Santa Cruz.
You're doing a food
freedom up. To sleep, freedom to entertain, freedom to sit, freedom to drink in public, freedom.
Just general freedom. Now, I see you have the old street spread. I hope to get you the new one shortly. I'll drive by and give you a copy of it if you want. And you also have Food Not Bombs literature, Join Freedom Sleepers literature. Mind if I take a few of these?
Take them.
Thank you. You have free radio. You have Huff literature. I just took the last rubber band, and it is now about to blow away.
There's more rubber bands.
Good, good. And looks like this table is overflowing with literature.
Yeah, well, it's called the condensed little table that is going to fit in my pet mobile, otherwise known as the Jara Connolly 95.
That's quite a mouthful you got.
That's right. And have you heard of the Braceros?
I have not.
Well, you should. Shame on you.
Indeed.
And the country.
Indeed.
The nation. That is not so great, and the America, who is not so beautiful.
I know. If you're talking about Braceros, you're talking about the workers in the fields?
My father.
Your father?
Yes, I'm a descendant of the Braceros.
Which Braceros? Where?
The fort, from the 19th. 40s and 50s and 60s.
Oh, you mean the people that were...
The Trinity.
The ones...
It's a curse.
You mean the braceros that were kind of imported into the country to break labor unions who are already here? That was the ones you're talking about?
The ones of the United States and enslaved.
The bracero program.
And for some, actually, the free exam was fumigation with DDT and forced to work, slowly kill themselves with the mini hoe.
But they picked a lot of lettuce cheaply, man. Come on.
Yes, we like it so much, I'm here again.
There you go, see? I mean, after all, you didn't die, you did just fine. What are you complaining about?
Yeah, really. It's take back.
Take back.
Take back the money, take back whatever that were supposed to be promised to the braceros.
Si. So, Lucero, how long have you been out here today? Give me that rubber band so we can put that on here.
Well, can you tell my face? I've been here exposed to the elements and the take back Santa Cruz abuse. How long? Look at it.
I can't tell, babe. You tell me.
I think it's like all day.
It feels
See?
Like all day. You look. I have a weathered face, but it's still a sweet face. I got to tell you. So what you say? Have you had any interesting encounters that you want to pass on?
No. Not much interesting encounters. Or it's like just walk away for the table. No question. No, we don't have any questions.
No $10 bills.
Actually, one.
You got a donation cup here, I see. Yeah. You got a $5 bill there. You
actually, it was a $10 from over here, over there. So
that
we'll
was nice.
Take them, kiss his ass too.
Yeah, well, I will be back to take my cut soon. And we've been talking. Walking up and down Pacific Avenue at about, oh, goodness, 10 to 4. Artisans Gallery has a freestanding illegal sign. The Imagine Positive Change meters. I count three of them so far. One in front of Heavenly Couture. And then there were two up near the New Leaf area on opposite sides of Soquel.
And what I'm doing here is something I've talked about probably too much on the air. The commercial signs you see that are sort of in a shape of an A that are in front of stores, they're sort of freestanding, are illegal. That is to say, there's no permitting process. They're not supposed to be on the sidewalk. They're not a criminal violation the same way that it would be illegal for a homeless person to, I don't know, sit with a dog and peacefully spare change by having a sign or sit next to a building just to rest. Those are illegal crimes, and they're criminal violations. But the violation of the signs, the ordinance, which does not allow you to place freestanding commercial signs, is apparently a civil violation. Although I've got to be honest, I'm actually speculating a little bit here because we've talked. We at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the civil rights group I work with, have talked about actually going around to the merchants and saying, look, we believe that human beings need to have the same rights as your signs. And if you'd like to sign a petition supporting that, we will support your right to have signs here. Otherwise, we will attempt to, to advise the city that there are numerous criminal violations or civil violations, actually, or whichever, along Pacific Avenue. And that's something we talk a lot about. We've been jabbering about it for years. And who knows? One of these days we may actually do it. So watch out, all you businesses with signs.
I have third-hand information from Geoff Jones, but it still may be accurate, which is, first of all, first-hand information was you saw Officer Ewan give you a sort of a positive symbol,
yeah,
as he walked by.
Gave us a peace sign.
I have a quick question. Anyone even saw a debit card anywhere around here?
No.
You better call your bank.
Okay.
Bummer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No worries.
So you're out here again, this time in artist garb, as you have kind of a, your artwork is sort of, you look like you've been painting, you have a sort of a,
apron,
thank you, you have an apron on, and, but you have your display device is out here, and no blue stripes yet, but the third hand word is that there's new brackets, blue brackets, due to appear any day now?
By third-hand information, I mean the man is telling the police, who's telling one of the other artists that was out here, but Yeah, he was just saying that they were going to re-implement the rules and kind of put the blue brackets back and really start enforcing it. That's the words that he used. But who knows? Who knows? Maybe they'll finally look at all the shit that they stepped in.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, I was in error about one of the laws that the... it was explained to me that one of these sections that actually... Well, according to my new understanding of the law, the current law is completely illegal to have any kind of display device unless you're inside these boxes. And therefore, everybody along Pacific Avenue who has a display device is illegal because there are no boxes.
Yeah.
Is that your understanding?
That's as far as I know. The boxes were here, and then they took them away.
Because I know that in the past, prior to the boxes, it was, you know, 14 feet from here, 14 feet from there.
Yeah.
But, and while it's still 14 feet from here and 14 feet from there for panhandlers and sitters, it is not 14 feet for a display device. There's simply no, although I got to perhaps review it again to be sure, no place to put a display device except inside these non-existent boxes.
Yeah, well, if they bring the boxes back out here, we're still not going to set up in those boxes. At least I'm not, speaking for myself. I'm not going to continue to be in these boxes. This is a rule that actually expired in June, and they're still going around arresting people, giving people tickets for a law that doesn't exist anymore.
Now, let me admit my error here, because I think I've given you a misimpression here, and you need to look over the law again by going to... You did?
Yep.
Well, maybe... See, I talked to the mayor, who doesn't know shit from Shinola anyway, but who nonetheless drew my attention to the section of the law that was expiring. The section of the law that expired on June 30th was not the entire law. It was only the section 4 itself, which stated something to the effect of, unless the city council passes a resolution by June 30th, 2015, then this section will expire. And what that means is that the boxes section continues, but the expiration date stuff goes away. So my new understanding of the law, which I do not necessarily suggest you follow until you read it yourself again, is the law stands as it was written last November or October, and is just as simply has no longer has that expiration section in it. It doesn't expire. It has, in fact, become the law that everything has to be inside bracketed boxes that is a display device. Now, I would like you to look it over and see if you agree with me next time you check over the law, because you're a man on the streets who actually is confronted with this shit all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I hope that she comes back and buys something from you and takes you home with her as well.
Oh, hey. Yeah, I wouldn't complain.
So I understand from Keith McHenry, who was your only supporter in court who showed up, that you guys were put at the end of the agenda. Is that true? Or?
Yeah, we went on last.
And how long did it take you before you actually were called up by a Commissioner Basket?
Let's see, we got there at about 1:30. We were in court until about 4:30. We were at the stand for maybe 40 minutes, 35 to 40 minutes.
So you actually talked to her for 35 or 40 minutes?
Well, I went first, and I let her know that I have some information that I would like to read out loud, and I have a copy of those documents if she would like to read along, and she just had the bailiff grab it, and she was like, oh, I can read faster than you, haha.
Did she read it aloud, or she just read it silently?
No, she read it silently, but she did acknowledge the things that were put in there, which I can't disclose too much information.
No problem. Did your presentation include the actual law, the municipal code?
Yes.
Did she make any comments on that?
Yes.
And did she say anything that might be relevant to other street performers?
I'm not going to say anything that she said. Again, secondhand information. I would just be kind of giving a general idea of it. But needless to say, it's being analyzed right now. They're kind of processing what is going to happen.
They or you as well?
Well,
you took notes, I take it, or you have mental notes?
Yeah, they'll give us a heads up of what's happening, is what I'm trying to say.
It's really too bad that no one was there witnessing this, because it was a public hearing, but there was probably no recording made of it since it was an infraction. And Joff and Alex have this, what I think is kind of a hyper-paranoid deal, where they don't want to talk about anything that goes on in court. It has to do with legal strategy, yada, 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 which I can understand in some circumstances quite appropriate. Here, I don't think it is. That's my opinion, because what a judge says is public. But it's only public if the people who hear it pass it on, because the judge isn't recorded in these things and probably isn't giving a written opinion, the commissioner in this case, Commissioner Kim Baskett. So what Kim Baskett's response is to this kind of stuff, I think, is very important to people on the street. And it's important that it be passed on. And it's too bad we weren't there. Had I known, as I said, that they weren't going to disqualify this commissioner, they're just going to stand there and... I guess they were there in their constitutional historical outfits, you know, as Benjamin Franklin and George Washington, which is, I think, is great theater and also quite relevant to the issues, slaveholders though they may have been at different points. But it's important, I think, not to get lost in a sort of mega secrecy where that does not get out to other people. In fact, Alex was quite upset with me, because I did post that they were intending to disqualify the commissioner, which I thought they had agreed to. It was a public thing. It was going to save people the trouble of coming to their hearing, because it wasn't going to be anything. It was just going to be a word disqualifying you, and then go to the next hearing. There would be the real trial. But it all became wrapped up in a sort of a secret legal strategy, I guess, which is too bad. But so far, they're back on the avenue, selling their stuff, displaying their work. There are no boxes there. There weren't yesterday or the day before when I was walking around. So that's all to the good. Let's hear some more. And maybe from you, your phone calls, 427-3772. Give me a call.
Now, did you actually go to trial? Was a cop there who was making the complaints?
Our arresting officers were not there, but Bush was. Who is the sergeant, I believe.
And what kind of testimony did he give? Or did he?
I can't say anything about his testimony, to be honest.
In the sense you don't remember, or you're choosing not?
A little bit of both. I can't put words into someone else's mouth, really. I can't quote exactly the things that he said or the case that he presented, but... they could have prepared him a little bit better.
Was he, in fact, making the complaint?
Not really. He's just doing his job, just talking for whoever he's working for.
But someone has to make a complaint against you. It has to be Bush or an individual citizen or maybe the city attorney.
I haven't heard any complaints from anyone. We're just artists out here showing people pictures.
I don't say legitimate complaints.
Ah, yes.
I mean, I'm talking about something where it says, oh, it's against the law. That's why you're here in court. So the cops who took you in to court must have thought you were operating illegally. Therefore, they took you to court, right?
I suppose.
And therefore, was Bush one of the officers who originally took you to the judge?
He was with them. He was not our arresting officer, though. So.
But he was, in essence, testifying before Baskett about the case.
Correct.
Now, at the end of all this, did she give you any indication of what her verdict would be or what was coming up next?
No. It's just all being processed. They just got you on it for a bit, see how it tastes.
Now, you did not enter a plea, as I understand it.
Correct. There was no plea.
Did she say, I'm entering a plea for you?
No, Gallagher did.
Gallagher entered the not guilty plea.
Correct.
Now, was this actually a trial that happened that day, or was it an arraignment?
I think it was a trial. I have no idea. I just went to court, was there. Let me be completely honest with you. I was not all there during that time. As a matter of fact, I had surgery the day before, and that day I had a following procedure where they removed a tube out of a place, which I will not explain.
Whoa, you don't need to do that. You're frightening me already.
Yeah, okay, so I was slightly impaired physically.
You were distracted.
Yes.
And that's a large snippet, almost an hour of the show from September 10th, 2015.
you want to go to the Huff website, you can track down the full show. But now we're going to be moving on in this patchwork show today. Today now being May 5th, 2022. We're going to check out Berkeley activist and attorney Andrea Henson, who is actually camping out with her clients and her friends in Berkeley in solidarity against the harassment of some of them by authorities as part of the Where Do We Go encampment that she and others have defended for over 2 years, and they've also defended themselves. This interview kind of goes into that in some detail, and here it is.